We talk a lot on this podcast about chess improvement, but when it comes to improving your hiring processes, Indeed is the platform you need. Indeed has over 350 million global monthly visitors, and it has a matching engine that helps you find quality work candidates fast. You can use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with your candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree that Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. Years ago, when I was running a chess teaching business, I found it hard to find good help, and I had to go through a lot of back and forth to even screen potential candidates. Indeed allows you to do those things efficiently in one place. Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed for hiring, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of Perpetual Chess will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility if you go to Indeed.com/chess. Just go to Indeed.com/chess right now, and you'll be supporting our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast, Indeed.com/chess. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America N.A., member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, everyone. I am Ben Johnson, and this is the Perpetual Chess Podcast. Perpetual Chess is a weekly chess interview show with accomplished chess players, authors, personalities, and adult improvers where they discuss their lives, their careers, and share tips about how to improve at chess. For more information, go to perpetualchesspod.com. So without further ado, let's get to the show. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Perpetual Chess. We have an inspiring, incredibly accomplished guest joining us this week. He is an elite player, a trainer, a chessable author, a YouTube presenter, and a chess commentator, and as of this year, a dad. He's the six-time champion of India. In fact, he won it 6 years in a row from 2003 to 2009. He was the Asian champion in 2009. Many other medals and distinctions that we don't have time to name all of. He's been a top 100 player in the world. His new chessable course is called Lifetime Repertoires Nimzo Semi Tarash. He somewhat famously served on the team of the world championship preparation team of his childhood hero, Viswanathan Anand, for three different world championships. He's also a founding teacher of Pro Chess Training, which he co-founded with friend of the pod, Grandmaster R.B. Ramesh, and GM Magesh Panchanathan. And I think that is enough of a glowing introduction. So without further ado, let's welcome Grandmaster Surya Ganguly. Surya, thank you for joining the show.
Thanks, Ben. It's an honor to be here. Thank you.
Well, it's an honor for me. I mean, you've done so much in chess. I mean, obviously, over the board, just incredible accomplishments, which we'll discuss in due time. But in the past year, I think partially related to quarantine, you've expanded what you've done even more. I mean, you had this incredible interview YouTube series with many of the legends of the game, and doing commentating out with the Chessable course. But Surya, if you don't mind, where I'd like to begin is the World Championship, because this is a weekly show and we haven't talked about it for a while. And of course, you have a unique perspective, having been a part of three World Championship teams. So as we record this on August 30th, there's less than 100 days before the World Championship begins on November 26th in Dubai, between, of course, Magnus Carlsen and Jan Nepomniachtchi. But my first question for you, Surya, was, in your time working on Vishy's team, what would you be doing at this stage of the tournament, of preparation?
Let me first of all go slightly backward. I just wanted to inform that when you are giving this long, sweet introduction, the biggest smile that that I got was when you told me I became a dad. So I really like that part when you gave an introduction that life changed drastically. All right, now getting back to your question on World Championship match. Well, we'll be mainly checking on openings and also play training games, give Anand positions to solve, to give training positions. Now, I also want to emphasize that giving Anand the training position, it's like feeding an elephant. Because first of all, you have to find a position which he's not aware of. Secondly, he's incredibly fast. So you have to find, you know, that kind of position which is challenging for him. And then, you know, you have to have that kind of amount of position which we will be able to feed him every day. So that, apart from opening, even, you know, giving him training positions was also very challenging. At some point, we came up with this idea that whatever we are analyzing on the opening, before showing that to him, we would actually give him as puzzles. And that turned out to be a fantastic way of working on opening. So, you know, let's say he gives me some certain line, like, okay, Surya, check this. And I start working on those. Obviously, we will be checking various complicated lines and complicated strategic dynamics, etc. And then we would give this to Anand as puzzles. So, yeah, it was opening oriented, but it also covered a thorough, in a greater part, of the game. Our typical schedule, I remember for the Kramnik match, was like we would start at 11 o'clock and we would finish around night 1 o'clock with lunch and dinner breaks. So yeah, it was very demanding. It was extremely hard working, but also it was immense fun. I mean, every moment of it, I enjoy it.
That's great perspective. And I know you've mentioned in the past, Grandmaster Anand's legendary work ethic, how it was, even though you felt like you worked hard on chess, it was a wake-up call for you. Now, let me ask you, Surya, let's go a little more big picture first. So, and of course, your role in the sort of function of the team has been discussed in the great book, The Anand Files, by FM Michael Oblin, who's been on the show. And Vishy himself discusses it in Mind Master. And we were lucky enough to have Grandmaster Peter Hein-Nielsen take us behind the scenes of the Gelfand match here on this podcast. But one thing I wonder is, so at this stage, are you guys all living somewhere together? Were you, and again, obviously it could be different for Magnus and Nepomniachtchi, but just to give some perspective, was this being done online at this stage, this far out, or were you guys all already convened somewhere?
Yeah, it was always, almost always exclusively at Batsodhan, where Anand lives, used to live. Now he's moved to Chennai. So all our camps were in Germany. That's where we worked. I don't remember any online camps as such. I mean, somehow it was never as productive as, you know, physical trainings. I mean, there the team would gather. So there were four core members, me, Radek, Radoslav Wojtyszek, Rustam Kazimdanov, and Peter Hein-Nielsen. And lots of great players, great trainers would often come and go. But this has been the core team which was working. And it was always physical.
Okay. Yeah, that's good to know. And in terms of the opening repertoires, like, obviously that's extremely valuable information. Of course, in the sort of annals of chess history, there have been stories of top players not knowing who to trust and who not to trust with the information of what openings they're going to play. So was your core team, the four of you, you guys were aware of what choices had been made in terms of what Vishy would play in each match?
Yeah. We had immense trust among each other. In fact, the team Anand had so much good coordination throughout all these camps. Actually, never heard any time, you know, someone accusing another team member, saying that, you know, why you didn't look at this variation properly. There was certain flaw. I mean, you know, when you're working at that level, there will be some mistakes happening, even in analysis, even with the best of computer, you know, you you might end up missing certain lines, but never, not even once, anyone accused anyone for missing certain things. And in fact, the team morning was so high. I particularly remember in many matches, but okay, let's just give an example. During the Gelfand match, often we would have this this thought, like what to tell Anand and what not to tell Anand. You know, sometimes, let's say we find an idea. There are, let's say, 9 positive sides. And then there is this series of, you know, some obscure line where we might get into not such an ideal situation. Now, we would often debate before the game, should we tell him or not? And often it has happened, we never told him. Because if we tell him, he would start with that. Because that's a tendency, right? So even we went to that extent where at some point we would simply take the call that, okay, no, let's not inform Anand about this.
That's funny. And I guess, you know, for the most part, it worked out. You were only parts of winning teams, as you've discussed in the past.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. So it would be very painful for me to see Anand losing. And I'm extremely satisfied that each time I saw him winning. And I mean, even when I was not part of this Chennai match, it was so painful for me to watch him losing. I mean, this was really, really painful.
Yeah. And of course, Surya on his YouTube channel has an incredible 4-part interview featuring Vishy Anand, and sometimes his wife Aruna joins them as well. So if any listeners haven't checked that out, it's required viewing. Now, I know, Surya, that you generally, I mean, I've as I mentioned, I've interviewed a lot of people who've worked on world championship teams. And I know that often someone on the team will be assigned a specific opening that they focus on. I'm curious, was that the case for you? And assuming it was the case, were you also aware of everything else that Vishy was working on? How did that all work?
So when we started this journey, like for the Kramnik match, it was very difficult for me. At that time, my opening knowledge was extremely narrow. I would play just one line as white, one line as black, one or two lines as black. So it might sound extremely odd if I tell you that during Kramnik match, you know, when I would get analysis, I would actually go to Rustam and ask him, what is Mehran? What does it mean by Mehran? What is anti-Moscow? What is Moscow? I didn't even know. I mean, literally, I mean, I was a grandmaster, but I would not know the names of the opening. I wouldn't know what to find. And how do you find something new when you do not know what is the existing? So in order to know the existing theory, I had to go through all these notes. And Arnold's notes always had a huge number of lines. Everything is covered. So even to find something new, first of all, I had to study those things. And initially, it was actually overwhelming, because to go through this insurmountable amount of work, which was beyond my imagination, literally beyond my imagination, it took a lot of time to adapt. I used to spend extra time just to even, you know, like to understand these openings, because I was a hardcore E4 player, and for Kramnik match, Anand was playing exclusively D4. Now, initially, I was more treated as an anti-computer guy, I think. You know, to find tactical ideas or to find ideas which computers are missing. So, I remember for Kramnik match, I was always getting positions which are super messy, super complicated. And it was more or less, you know, to have a tactical check. So, they would work on some line and they would say, you know, Surya, see if there are some loopholes here. So I would try to come up with something interesting which computers are not showing. That was more or less my job for Kramnik match. But as the match kind of progressed, as we started training more often, slowly I started picking up all sorts of lines. And already by Topalov match and subsequently by Gelfand match, I was playing everything. I was part of every single detail. So it started with the Topalov match when we decided we should get more organized and everyone should know everything. So by Topalov match happened, all the team members knew every single thing that was going on in the repetware. So during Kramnik match, it was still kind of work-based. You know, I have got this assignment. Rustam had got some different assignment. But couple of match onwards, it was like everybody is involved in everything. And that worked even better.
Okay, yeah. And of course, with Peter Hein Nielsen having been a part of that team and presumably still being a part of Magnus's team, although no one really knows, it might be fair to guess that that's how things move going forward. There's so many questions I could ask you about this stuff. I find it fascinating, and I hope and think that listeners do as well. Now, one thing, of course, Surya, as I'd like to ask you about later, you're a big fan of physical training yourself, play some badminton and ping pong, and I'm sure other sports. And of course, that's taken a more prominent role for elite players generally. So to the extent that Vichy was doing physical training, was your team involved in that? Because I know that often you'll hear about top players going for walks with their seconds to sort of brainstorm. Like, so when you say you're working from 11 a.m. To 1 a.m. each day, does that involve breaks where there's physical training, or is it just all chess all day?
We used to do some physical training, but it involved mainly walks. Sometimes I remember we would do stairs, and that's why we were starting at 11, so Anand could finish his physical training. If we want to do, we could do physical training in the morning. But once the training started, it was mostly, you know, taking breaks for long walks.
Okay, so mostly just all chess all the time. And it's so hard to know, I mean, especially from my perspective, but I think from yours, as we dig down deeper looking at this upcoming match, do you have any guesses about sort of opening choices? Like, these guys are so versatile now. Any like stylistic choices you think either player might make, Surya?
I think chess has changed drastically with the younger generation. I mean, let's go back to, when Kasparov was playing full-fledgedly in a tournament like Linares or Dortmund or Wike, you wouldn't see that many sidelines happening. Maybe, you know, like some. Morozovic playing some sidelines maybe some top players playing here and there some sidelines, but not that often. For example, I can name literally any opening and any kind of sidelines. That was not very natural. But nowadays, if you look at tournaments, everything, literally everything is being played. And with strong computers coming, I think the opening approach also changed. I mean, you cannot just stick to only main lines. It will not solve the purpose because everybody is well prepared. Information is available. You cannot hide anything. Nowadays, everybody has got access to the strong machines, all sorts of bases, correspondence bases, computer bases. So everybody is working hard. Nowadays, it's more about getting a position which is unfamiliar. So that's why players are constantly jumping. And it's almost impossible to predict what is going to come. So, no, it's I won't be able to predict what openings are going to happen in the upcoming World Championship match, because pretty much everything is possible.
Yeah, it's true generally that, I mean, again, these players are so versatile and they can play anything at any time. But I have noticed that in the World Championships in particular, it still seems like, at least as of the recent World Championships, that could change this time, there's still a main repertoire that it seems like players go in with, where like it's innocent until proven guilty, like Magnus springing the surprise with the Shveshnikov and basically rarely encountered difficulties, so he rarely switched against Caruana. Meanwhile, with White, it seemed like he was having trouble getting an advantage, so he did try the English and stuff like that. So it does seem like, and of course, in I believe it was game one against Karjak, and he played the Trompovsky in game one just to sort of throw a curveball right from the beginning. So it does seem like there's still something first and foremost that each player prepares for each color against each main move. So I am curious, like stylistically, you know, Magnus, of course, being famously more technical, and Jan being maybe more dynamic, although again, these guys are amazing at everything. Do you think that they'll try to steer into particular waters, Surya?
Yeah, I mean, one thing is for sure, what you made a very valid point in terms of world championship matches. I'm not expecting, something like Budapest or, you know, some sidelines. But even in the main lines, like, for example, Gelfand playing Svechnikov and, you know, Grönfeld was one of the biggest surprises we got in the world championship match. So even in terms of main lines, we don't know where what is going to come. It can literally be anything. And in terms of style, yes, for sure, Magnus is more technical and Jan is more tactical. And you rightly pointed out it is subjective. I mean, at that level, I mean, you know, like Magnus is also exceptionally sharp in tactics, but technically he's more stronger as compared to his tactical skill, and same for Jan. But I think a lot depends also how they take the match, how they approach the match. One thing I really liked, this addition of Peter Lekko in Jan's team. Mm-hmm. I think the style is so diverse. I mean, I have worked with Peter a number of times individually and also in Anand's team. So I'm actually very curious to see how their training sessions are with Jan and Peter. It is so, so diverse. And I think someone like this is what Jan needed. You know, for candidates, for example, someone who'd kind of slow him down, who'd get more stability in his in Jan's game, and it got reflected. I must say, Jan's game. I mean, Jan is a very exceptionally strong player, and his game actually improved in pretty much every aspect. So, and we also know that. If we look at the classical score, it's 4-1 in favor of Jan. I don't know how many players are having that kind of score against the world champion. So, 4 wins and just 1 loss. But, yeah, still Magnus is a stronger player in terms of results, in terms of rating, everywhere. So, expecting a very exciting match.
Yeah, I can't wait for it as it gets closer every day. And Surya, a player of your stature, obviously at the top, you know, for world-class players such as yourself, I mean, it's a fairly small circle of people. And of course, Jan's team became public, or at least the parts that he was willing to become public became public after he won the candidates, as you mentioned, including Grandmaster Peter Lekko. Do you hear anything about who might be on what team that, like, someone like me, you know, dedicated chess fan, but not best friends with a lot of world-class players, do you hear anything about who might be on what team, or even just conjecture based on who's not appearing in tournaments and stuff like that?
No, this I have absolutely no idea about. But I expect some kind of surprise in both teams. But okay. I do not have any information on this.
Okay. And... just one or two more on the world championship. So it sounds like you're expecting a close match, a dynamic match, unpredictable, possibly more decisive results than we've seen in recent years. Do you have any prediction about the winner?
If I have to pick one right now, I'll pick Magnus. And I'm also, by the way, I want to add that I'm very excited. I'm part of this Polgar team, the Kramnik-Polgar challenge, which is going on.
Right, yeah.
And the team who will win this this championship, like this altogether score, the entire team will be going to Dubai to visit the World Championship match. And after 3 tournaments, we are currently leading. We have a strong lead. And the final tournament is coming soon. And I'm kind of excited because I'm also a trainer there. So I hope my team wins and all of us go together to witness the match.
That would be amazing. We'll be rooting for you.
Can I add one more thing, by the way?
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. It might be surprising, but you know, I helped Anand I worked for Anand in this 3 World Championship matches, Kramnik, Topalov, and Gelfand. But I actually never saw him making the move physically, because we never went to the tournament hall. So I actually never saw a World Championship match live. So this would be the first time.
That's very funny.
If it happens, yeah.
Yeah, all the more reason to root for you.
Yeah.
And we have a question from longtime listener and friend of the pod, Chris Brainscott. And what Chris asks, Surya, is do you think that your prior experience working for world championship matches would make someone hiring you for future matches more likely, less likely, or neither?
I don't know. I mean, it a lot depends how they know about, first of all, my working style, and also what kind of relationship what kind of bonding I have with that particular person. I think it really matters a lot. For example, I'm pretty sure. I mean, I have got many strong stronger players who are my good friends. So, for example, they would feel more comfortable than someone who doesn't know me personally, because this bonding is really needed. It's not just about the analytical skill; it's also about bringing the team spirit, bringing the good vibes, and this is what I always felt in Anand's team. That all of us were such great friends, buddies, and we had such a great team spirit. And end of the day, I think this is what will make a lot of difference. Not just how good you are working, but also how much bonding and how what sort of team spirit we have inside the team. So yeah, I don't think I answered that question in a straightforward way, but I guess you got the hang of it.
Yeah, I did. And of course, you've talked at length in the past, both in your interview with Vishy, and it's been written about in the books we mentioned. There was this sense with when you were began your work with Anand's team that you were sort of handpicked, and you to this day don't know what you did to deserve this, right?
Yeah, but absolutely. I mean, if now somebody would pick me, hypothetically, right. Let's say if I was picked for one of this upcoming World Championship match for one of this team, I would totally understand. I mean, here I will not have any surprise. But back then, I just I did not understand, and I still don't get it why he picked me.
Yeah, well, it's a great lore that he did, and definitely we appreciate the insights that you're able to provide from those experiences. But Surya, we've got a lot to talk about with such a broad array of contributions you make to the chess world. So I'd like to get into your chess learning and your Chessable course, but first we're going to take a break and hear from our sponsors. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by aimchess.com. If you haven't checked out aimchess.com by now, what are you waiting for? What aimchess does is it collects your games from the major chess sites and then gives you actionable advice of how to improve your game. It might be to work on a specific opening or to get better at end games or improve your time management or whatever it may be. And then it gives you related puzzles to help you improve that specific skill. They are constantly improving the site. They recently added blindfold tactics, time management training, common checkmate patterns. So there's so much to do there. If you decide to subscribe, be sure to use the promo code PERPETUAL30. Details are in the show notes for aimchess.com. Perpetual Chess is brought to you in part by chessmood.com. Chessmood is a subscription video service by a team of GMs headed by Grandmaster Avchek Grigorian, who you can hear on episode 192 of Perpetual Chess. They offer a comprehensive video library featuring an opening repertoire for both colors, as well as courses on middle game and end game mastery. They also have great free content. Avtech has an insightful blog, and they have a YouTube channel featuring daily lessons with a grandmaster. So all the links you need if you want to find out more are in the show description, or just go to chessmood.com and have a look around if you're interested.
This is Amy Poehler. My new movie, Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, is coming to theaters June 14th, and it's making me feel joy and sadness and anger, definitely some disgust,
Rose,
and I think a little fear.
Really?
But I'm also feeling these new emotions like anxiety, embarrassment, envy, and ennui.
It's what you call the boredom.
Okay, that one was weird. It's going to be the feel-everything movie of the summer. Disney and Pixar's Inside Out 2, only in theaters June 14th. Get tickets now.
And we are back. And the course, Surya's new course, is called Lifetime Repertoires Nimzo Semi Tirash. As a Nimzo player and someone who's going to interview Surya, of course, I picked it up. Part one focuses on the Nimzo Indian, as well as what to do against all these pesky system openings that Surya alluded to in the world that we could even see in the World Championship, potentially. And part two will deal with the Semi Tirash. Now, Surya, I wanted to ask you about a quote from the course. Because of course, Chessable, obviously, they've built a business around their spaced repetition, which I find incredibly valuable in assisting memory. But one also must walk the fine line of knowing what they're remembering. And you say early in the course, for me, this is a quote, for me, memorization without understanding is a sin. So I think that's an important point to highlight. And I would love to hear you talk more about that, Surya.
I always believe this, that if you memorize something without understanding, it has got a very short span in your mind. It will fade away. It's not just about chess, practically about anything. That's why, I remember my school days, I would prepare for exams. And if I would just remember something for the sake of, writing those in the exams, as soon as the exam is over, I'll forget it. In fact, even now, before a game, if I'm preparing something very quickly and just screaming through the computer lines, I will probably remember it for the game, but after that, I'll have just no recollection. So I wanted to emphasize this. This is how I work on openings. This is how I also during World Championship match, when I'm explaining certain ideas, we will never just give some random computer lines, but actually to explain how things are going. This is how I personally also prepare openings. And that's what I wanted to emphasize on my course as well, that you need to understand first. And in that case, even if you forget the lines, you'll be able to figure it out over the board. You can calculate, you understand, once you understand the gist of the opening, why you are playing certain things, let's say Nimzo Indian, take some any variation, let's say Karpov system or anything, yeah, Rubinstein. Unless you know the concept in a bigger way, you understand each and every move, the reasoning, you are bound to forget. And the last thing, the last thing you want to do during a game is half remembering, half calculating. You are neither here nor there. And it often happens, yeah. Like, we see, like, yeah, I have seen this, somewhere, black plays bishop g4. Maybe it is in this variation. And then we are kind of half calculating. That's something we should never do. Either you calculate there, sit there and calculate, or, you're 100% sure you remember everything. So that's why it's better, when you're preparing to understand as clearly as possible.
So we do, of course, find ourselves in that situation sometimes where we feel like we're maybe half remembering, half calculating. So what do you advise to do if you find yourself having that impulse, Surya?
In that case, I would suggest just calculate.
Okay.
If you try to remember, just close your eyes, remember, for a minute or something. And then if you cannot do it, don't make the chess game a jigsaw puzzle. Mm-hmm. It's better to, just sit there and calculate. And I'm saying this from my personal experience. Like, I have lost number of games like this by half remembering and half calculating.
Okay, so it happens even up to your level. That's, I guess, reassuring, but good advice nonetheless. And I will say, Surya does a fantastic job in his course of explaining basically every move, which obviously I'm a big fan of Chessable, but some courses are more successful at doing this than others. And it is, it's very helpful. But I still think players, and especially, obviously, the lower you go sort of down the rating ladder, the more common the feeling is going to be, where, like, if every move is not explained, you're not going to really understand the move. So, Surya, in those situations where a player doesn't understand the move and it's not explained in the analysis, how do you recommend trying to get to the bottom of it?
Well, it would have been nicer if I could, show how exactly I work with engines. Basically, what is to be done is you turn on some engine. It's fine to turn on the engine as long as you are driving. Not like, you are getting driven by the engine just by hitting spacebar and seeing what is the best move. Then you are like completely lost. Start the engine, or even before, you can make your own moves. Couple of your own moves, like the way you want to calculate the moves that bothers you, the move that you are scared of from your opponent's side. And then check with the engine why these moves are not working. So it's basically engine should be your friend who will say, whom you will guide. Basically, you will clear your doubts with the engine. That is, I'm saying, if you don't have any, let's say, any personal trainer and so on. Now, my Chessable course was actually very challenging to me. It took, more than roughly about six months probably. I wanted to make a course which is useful for every level. And when I say every level, I literally mean every level. Even like before the candidates, I was convinced that there will be some novelties which many players would not know, might not know even at that level. But at the same time, it should be accessible to players who are amateurs also. So the way I did was I did not compromise with the notes, with the novelties. So everything that you are seeing in my course, I am ready to play this against best of the players in any given championship. But at the same time, I made sure all the moves are explained in such a level, particularly in my videos, that anybody would understand it and it will be, again, accessible for everyone.
Yeah, and again, I was really impressed with it, and I'm excited to continue to dig into it. Now, Surya, I'm sure avid Chessable fans are wondering, of course, in the information age these days, there's lots of resources. And even with Chessable, there's I Am Christoph Zalecki and Daniel Barish's Nimzo Rogozin course. Could you give listeners any insights about any sort of, obviously the Semi-Tirage and the Rogozin are totally different, so that part's easy. But in terms of the Nimzo, have you had a look at that course, and could you speak to any sort of stylistic differences between them?
Absolutely. So first of all, I wanted to make a course, again, this is my experience from all these World Championship matches, to write your own theory, to challenge everything that is traditional. So you will see very rarely, in probably just a couple of lines where I'm following the so-called main theory. But otherwise, almost in every possible line, I am deviating as quickly as possible, getting into a fresh territory, surprising your opponent. And if you look at World Championship matches against Kramnik, Topalov, and Gelfand, you'd also notice that we introduce system. I mean, let's say the Kramnik match, this entire Mehran thing. So we introduced an entire system. It's not just a novelty. So this is what I tried to give in my course. That's what I think it sets it apart completely. And there are many World Championship novelties which were not used, which can be found in the course. So when I made the course, I was 100% sure. I mean, it will not match with any other course. There's just no way. There's just no way it will match, because I'll be deviating in the most unique manner in pretty much in every lens.
Excellent. And the Semi-Tirage half of the course, I believe, is coming out and pretty soon, right? Like October, is that right? Do you know, Surya?
Well, I wanted to do it, but then things are kind of... I have to admit that we have to wait a little bit more, because I'm starting to play tournaments. I'm playing in Sharjah, then Grand Swiss is happening. So I'm trying my best to get it done as quickly as possible, but definitely not October.
Okay. Well, I mean, first of all, it's great that you're able to play, given the pandemic that's been going on, and also still pursuing that. And I know that you recently played in Biel, and it's I'm sure it makes you a better course author that you're still out there competing against these other chess monsters. Now, Surya, I want to talk a bit more about chess improvement, but pivot and talk about our pro chess training, your new site. But first, we're going to take one more break and hear from our sponsors. Perpetual Chess is proud to be brought to you in part by Chessable.com. Chessable, of course, is known for its proprietary move trainer technology, which utilizes spaced repetition to quiz you and make sure that you remember whatever tactical patterns or opening sequences that you're working on. They have a huge catalog of great books from top flight authors, both for purchase. And if you check for their short and sweet courses, you can find tons of free content. Speaking of free content, Chessable, of course, has also recently launched an adult improvement focused chess podcast called How to Chess with yours truly hosting it. Check for it on Chessable's YouTube channel, and you can also subscribe on the podcast platforms.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin, or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
And we are back. And so, Surya, you and Grandmaster Ramesh and Grandmaster Magesh have launched this this site called Pro Chess Training. Could you let our listeners know a little bit about the vision behind it and what your role is within the organization?
Sure. So Ramesh contacted me long back, actually. And he said he wants to launch an online platform, and he's looking for someone, you know, with whom he could work. Now, Ramesh, I knew from my childhood, basically. When I started playing chess, I knew him. So we are good friends, and I know as a human being, he's excellent. So as far as integrity is concerned, he is definitely the guy. I would normally never get into any kind of business because, you know, I don't have that kind of mindset. I don't know how to work on these academies. I can just be a coach in anywhere. I can train with players. But to have something where you have a lot more responsibility, this I wasn't sure. But when Ramesh approached, just because it is Ramesh, you know, I started listening to him. Soon Magesh joined in. And then I realized that with these guys, we cannot create... I will never create something which just makes money and do not give anything to the students properly. So that's the first reason for me to get into this. It took us 5 months to actually just set up the course, like how this should be, how it will be beneficial for the maximum benefit to the students. Now, it was very easy to have, you know, just one single class and get some good coaches, which is open to all. Maybe some unrated players will be learning with some 2400 players, and we get some big guys for coaching. Now, I think this is very good business, but end of the day, this is, I will go as far as saying, you know, it's not that useful. I mean, it's good for YouTube, but when we are talking about proper training, it has to be categorized. There has to be some groups. There has to be some proper syllabus, and you need some specialized coaches for those particular groups. So we broke it down to 5 groups. The first group is about 1,000 to 1,400, then 1,400 to 1,800, then 1,800 to 2,200. The fourth group is 2,200 to 2,400. And the final group is 2,400 plus, and where many grandmasters are also welcome as a student. In the last group, which is... the group 5, 2,400 plus players. There we actually have a couple of 2,600s like Vokaturo, like Prague, like Murali Karthikeyan, who have joined as students. There are many grandmasters who are students. And in this particular group, we get coaches like, you know, Kazimzanov, Ponomaryov, Nisipiano, Swidler, and many actually, Elianov, Navara, Hari taught. And myself and Ramesh, we are also teaching. I personally go through every single PGN file, every single video of Pro Chess training from group 1 to group 5. Actually, that's my currently that is my that is my main training that I get, because we have got like 40 coaches and everybody specialized in certain areas. So we know, you know, who are the coaches. A coach can be great teaching, let's say 2400 plus player, but maybe he is not so great dealing with players who are 1400. So not necessarily. There are some coaches who are capable of teaching in any groups. Thanks to my YouTube streams, now I'm capable of teaching absolutely anyone. So that's why I'm teaching in all the groups. Whenever I have time, when I'm playing tournament, of course, I cannot do it. But yeah, basically the objective was to provide something that is extremely economical. For example, I can just give you a rough idea. Like, let's say in group 4, which is like 2200 to 2400, they get weekly 4 trainings plus 2 training games, 2 tournaments, plus review test. This is in 1 week. And these trainers are between, let's say, 2500 to 2700. And for this plan, in an entire month, they have to pay $100. In reality, like, this $100 will basically last only one single individual session of 1 hour. And here they're getting a huge amount of trainers. And we also have, sorry for making this slightly longer, this answer. We also have the mentor for each group who are kind of responsible, who checks again all the files and fix the topic, fix the schedule, arrange the tournaments, arrange the training sessions. And I'm actually overwhelmed with the response we got. Everyone who joined, you know, they are just, they're performing good. They are always sticking to ProChess training. And every time we are bringing someone new, we are making, like last, in the last month, we got Wesley for the highest group. This in the September, wow. we'll get Anish. Anish will be doing some opening training with the students. So yeah, it's growing and I'm thoroughly enjoying every moment of it. I actually get to learn a lot because imagine you know, we ask some grandmaster that, you know, you have to go and make a training session in a group of 25 grandmasters or 25 players who are 2400 plus, and it involves players like Vokaturo, Prag, Karthikeyan. It's quite intimidating, actually. You cannot just go empty-handed. You really have to have some unique material to teach them. So it's quite challenging. And in the process, I'm also learning a lot.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, those kids are monsters. So
yeah.
It would definitely take some work. And so, what do you notice about the way that kids are learning today? I mean, obviously, it's kind of a hot-button topic, the explosion of chess information that's available and the sort of speed with which kids in particular are improving. How does that affect your career, and how do you adapt your teaching material for that?
I remembered when I was at their age, we had to wait one whole year for one single GM tournament, which used to take place in my city. I'm talking about India, and in that one tournament, we would get to meet the grandmasters. So, like once in a year, you get to meet the grandmasters. Here, if we talk about Indian youngsters, they're getting coaching everywhere. There is Anand's Academy where they're getting trained. There is ProChess training. They have all these individual students. Then there is this Gelfand, Kramnik Polgar Challenge where they're getting trained by all the great trainers. So, and they have their personal trainer and the information is available widely. So these kids are actually monsters. Now, training them is difficult. It is challenging. But still, you know, you can... their best strength is their eagerness to learn, their calculating capacity, their speed. But still, their knowledge is something that where we can help them. So, you know, we work on end games, we work on classics, also personal experience. I think... you know, the time is precious. So they cannot just rely, you know, that I learned from my own mistake. They have to also learn from others' mistake. And I can actually even show my games where I am going wrong, and they can learn from that. But mainly, I would say it is about knowledge and wisdom. That is what I'm sharing.
Makes sense. And do you have many adult students in ProChess training?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, if you're just speaking about age, we have, I think, from 6 to, let's say, 65. So, okay. And another thing, yeah, so this group 1 and 2, so basically until 1800, we are using this interactive boards, which means at any given moment when I'm asking the students, you know, what move has to be played here, they actually don't type, they don't say it on voice, but they get it on their screen. And they have to make that particular move or a series of moves, whichever way I am kind of asking the questions. And we are actually getting all this data. So, you know, even there are a group of 50 people or 100 people or 120 people, it doesn't really matter, particularly in group 1 and 2. Because I'm always seeing what was their first attempt, how much time they took. And we are getting all this data. And this is also applicable with all their homework, their weekly homework when we are sending. We actually get to see who took how much time, what was their first attempt, what was their second attempt. And that gets a bit personalized because slowly I get to know, you know, what players are thinking, what kind of moves. So that really helps us to get to the student and say, you know, look, this is where you have to improve. Then we have got all our individual WhatsApp groups and, you know, Facebook, Discord, everywhere where they are communicating with the coaches.
Sounds like a lot of work for you coaches, let alone for the students.
I have to say admins. I mean, we have got some very strong admins also who are taking care of the technical part. And then we assign different coaches, you know, certain coach will deal with different groups. For example, I am always in charge of the group 5, which is 2400 plus. So I know everything what is going on there. So I am assigned for that. So likewise, you know, everyone has got their own role, which they're doing it sincerely.
And obviously, it sounds amazing to get that much instruction, 4 lessons per week. And I'm sure people are doing stuff on top of that. But obviously, no matter what people get in terms of, as you say, group lessons and individual lessons, a lot of the improvement that one makes or doesn't make is going to come down to what they do on their own. So Surya, I'm sure you get asked this by your students all the time, but how do you advise, especially adult improvers who are not looking to become world champions, how do you advise them to sort of budget their chess study time?
First of all, one thing I always, all three of us, myself, Ramesh and Magesh, we are brutally honest on this. So if somebody would come and ask, you know, I'll talk about the financial budget, that we have this much money and we can only afford, let's say, pro chess training, or we can get an individual coach. We will actually say, you know, don't get into pro chess training, get an individual coach, because this is not a substitute for your personalized individual training. In fact, for example, in pro chess training, we very rarely show openings. We say, you know, this you take care on your own, because learning openings are much easy. I mean, you just get some chessable course, you buy some books, and you're good to go on openings. So we take care of the other parts, middle game, end game, and everything else. So so that's the financial part. And dividing time on improvement, it largely depends on the rating, I would say. The lower the rating, the lower the priority of opening. That would be my suggestion. Openings, once again, if you want to do openings, yeah. As I said, get some chessable course, get some books, learn opening, move on. But do not forget that, you know, you have to work on other areas of the game, like middle game, end game, analysis. So these things will be extremely important. And that's what we are doing.
Okay, good advice. So it sounds like solve tactics, read books, the sort of usual advice. Do you have any advice of like how much tactics? Because I think people always struggle with prioritizing different study tasks. Is it too individual to say?
Yes. I think first thing to understand is there is no thumb rule. I mean, what works for Anand will not work for Magnus. What works for Magnus will not work for Jan. Everybody will have to find their own recipe and own method. I mean, I can say, you know, go and solve 6 hours of tactics, but the guy may not have 6 hours time, first of all. And maybe he doesn't need that kind of tactics. Maybe he needs something else. Maybe he needs some sort of end games. So it has to be personalized. I mean, tactics is of course important, but so are endgame, so are other areas. For example, we often underestimate how important things are other than chess to improve chess, like physical fitness, like your personality. Let's not forget, I mean, sports is something where your true personality, gets revealed. Yeah. I'm giving this interview right now. You never know what is my personality because it's all masked, right?
Right.
I mean, I will not be talking in the same way when I'm talking with someone else. Same is applicable to you. But when we are getting into sports, our true personality actually gets reflected, who we are. I mean, if you want to judge me, go and see my games. I mean, not if you want to judge me. If you want to analyze my my personality, I think all my games are right there. So, you know, you get to know me better just by looking at my games. Now, as the personality develops, as you get, your knowledge, your wisdom, your physical health, your mental health, then your chess also improves. That's why you will always notice if you talk to top players, they are so versatile. I mean, not just in chess, but in life also, they're so versatile. Their knowledge, their interest. So these are the things, sometimes it gets ignored. Sometimes we take chess as just like a school subject. You know, I memorize a bunch of things. I memorize certain end games. I memorize certain openings and I'll go and play well. But that will not happen because every time you will get into an unknown situation and you are not prepared. Like, we are not usually prepared how to handle unknown situation. We want everything under control. But chess is like life. It's full of uncertainty. How good you are handling uncertain situation, that is what will define how good you are as chess player. You cannot have everything in control. So how comfortable you are when things are uncomfortable, that's what matters end of the day.
Okay, great advice. And one more on pro chess training. Obviously, Magesh, last I checked, was based in the United States, but you and Grandmaster Ramesh are in India. I'm guessing a lot of your students are in India. So how do you guys account for all the time zone differences? Do you have a lot of students in Europe and the US? Or, I mean, I'm guessing the lessons are archived, but are they like spread throughout the clock or how does all that work?
So that is why 5 to 6 months went, you know, to structure the course, to talk about the rating groups, to talk about the time zones. We expected students from everywhere, and that's what happened actually. Obviously, it's more from US and India, but also we got lots of European students. So our classes are targeted in the following manner. Out of this weekly 4 classes, 3 of them we get, 2 of them are in weekends at 8 p.m. Indian time. So it also suits for the US students because it's weekends morning. Then we have 2 weekday classes. 1 we keep at 8 p.m. US time, and 1 we keep at 8 p.m. Indian time. So we are basically saying, you know, whether you are from India or US, you'll actually attend 3 classes easily. The 4th class, you can attend, you know, if you're in India, you have to wake up at 5:30, and in US, also you have to attend on the daytime in an office day, but office day or school day. But all the videos are accessible. So if you miss a class, you still get the videos as long as your subscription is active. You get all the PGNs and everything. We got many European students who are attending these weekend classes, and they're also relying on the videos. So this is the best we could offer. Then there were some trouble we had initially before actually launching Pro Chess Training, that we wanted to have training games. This we felt very important for the students, where, you know, we will select the positions theme-based and they have to play against each other in that particular group. Now, how to find a time which is suitable for Indian student as well as US students? That's why we have 2 training games every week, 2 Blitz and Rapid tournaments every week. So again, satisfying, you know, 1 training games will be at 8 p.m. Indian time, 1 will be at 8 p.m. US time. It doubles our work, but that's how we solved it. As far as the review test, the homework is concerned, that one we could solve. You know, it is just on the website. It gets uploaded Monday, and then you have your entire week. You can click it anytime. The moment you click, the time starts running, and we get the data. So it took a lot of time, but I think we found the solution for each and everything.
You cracked the code. Yeah. And of course, our interview is taking place at 8 p.m. Indian time. So being that I'm in the United States. I don't want to keep you for too long, as listeners can gather. So you're extremely busy, but I'd like to hear a couple of stories from you before we go. And I have one more listener question I want to get into. But the first thing, Surya, is I heard you mention in another interview and you mentioned the annual tournament in your native Calcutta. You mentioned being the person who operates the demonstration board when Anand came, and I believe you were 9 years old, if my math was right. Could you give a little more detail on that story? I mean, I love these stories. They're kind of sprinkled throughout chess history of some like future grandmaster witnessing some, you know, great player come and the imprint that it leaves.
Yeah, I mean, at least I can say that to start with, Anand felt like a coconut tree back then. I mean, I was so little and he was so tall. I mean, it was just... and it was very inspiring. I mean, for us, you know, like Anand was our idol, our hero. Seeing him for the first time and getting a chance to work on that demonstration board and play the moves, what he was playing. I mean, clearly I didn't understand a thing back then, but still it was just inspiring. It was also his personality was always very, very charming. Actually, even now, I mean, for me, Anand is more like a brother, more like elder brother. I have to actually work hard to digest that, you know, he is 5-time world champion. He is a legend. But each time I would talk to him, he's just like a brother and such an inspiration. So yeah, first time meeting him, and I also played in the simultaneous with him, and which of course I lost easily, but it turned out I was the last man standing there. So my game finished at the very end and I was very proud of it back then. You know, like it was like, you know, I was holding with this legendary player for longest time, although I was lost as early as maybe 15 moves. All those memories are very vivid in my mind. I can literally see those moments as clearly as possible. And all the childhood memories are really awesome.
I bet. And then, of course, you, even at that time, I think you were already becoming a top young player, and your class, your birth year, had like Grishuk, Aronian, like, and I know there's a bunch more. Could you help me out with like who else was born in that year? And I'm curious what sort of stories that leads to when you guys run into each other now.
Well, for example, this I can tell you this 92 world under 10. That I played, mm-hmm. It was won by Maxian Luke, but the participants in that tournament, some of them were like Levon Aronian, Grischuk, there was Backrot, there was Vallejo Paco, Ruslan Paramariov, he came in 94, but also similar age group. Then there were like bunch of 2600, but you know, every tournament you go, there is Grischuk, Levon, Backrod, and so on. It's not exactly super easy. And also, and I mean, Nihua, for example, I'm not even counting the grandmasters and 2600. I remember there was Azarov, there was Paragua, there were like bunch of grandmasters, but so many strong players.
And what's your most memorable encounter with a future super grandmaster? So someone you played when you were a kid that ended up being one of these household chess names.
Well, I remember Levon and Grischuk. I played a number of games. Levon, a Backrod also. I almost every world championship match I would play with the Backrod, then Paco as well. So yeah, but at some point Backrod was dominating all this. I keep saying Backrod. I think the actual pronunciation is Backrod.
This is a French grandmaster, Etienne Backrod.
Etienne Backrod. So he was dominating all this world championship. He would win very convincingly. I remember with the Grischuk, I even had done, if I remember correctly, it was adjourned even. I have to check, but I think this game was adjourned and it was played again later. So some very interesting memories. I have a very funny memory with Magnus, actually. So I'm playing in Dubai, and Magnus is a young kid. He comes with slippers in his one hand, with raisins, with orange juice. And, you know, in Dubai, back then there used to be break, the prayer break, which would take place during the game. So there will be like 10, 15 minutes break. And Magnus would immediately run to play foosball or some ping pong during the game, basically, when the break takes place. And then when he comes back, he's completely drenched in sweat, and then he starts playing. So I'm playing this kid who is whose name is Magnus Carlsen. Okay, he's young, talented, but definitely I'm expected to win this game. I'm black in this game. And I get brutally crushed, like brutally. I am so devastated. And just to, you know, make my suffering more, our trainer Vladimirov, who trained the Indian team for a long time, he comes to me and says, don't worry, Surya, you lost to a future world champion.
Now
this is the last thing I wanted to hear. I mean, who cares whether he becomes world champion or not? I mean, I just lost to a kid very badly.
How old do you think he was at this point?
We can check this. This was in Dubai, probably 13 or something. I don't know.
Okay.
Yeah, 12, 13. But I'm pretty sure this should be. We can just Google this and figure it out. So, but then after a couple of rounds, Magnus is playing Vladimirov, and he met him brutally. And this time it was my turn. Yeah, I went to Vladimirov and said, "Don't worry, Vlad. You lost to a future world champion."
Yeah. Looks like it might have been in 2004.
So. Yeah, it's 2004. Yeah.
Okay. amazing story. Thank you. So yeah. And yeah, one of a kind for sure. What a special talent. So we've got one more listener question, Surya, and this one is from a recent, I believe, supporter of the podcast. Listeners who support Perpetual Chess, of course, can submit questions for our guests. And Satyajit Malagu, thank you for the support. Satyajit says, after Anand, who is your favorite player and why? And he also asks, how are your ping pong skills these days? So you can take them in either order.
Okay. All right, so ping pong skills. I play lots of sports. Ping pong, I started taking training very recently, so I wouldn't say it's great, but I'm kind of picking up. Although due to pandemic, it stopped, and I'm again planning to start it. So that's going on. And my favorite player, apart from Anand, actually, as a kid, when I started playing chess, always my favorite player has been Fischer, all-time favorite player. But as I grew up, I kind of, like right now, if you ask me who is my favorite player, I don't have any. Like that also includes Anand. I mean, I'm inspired by many players, but I don't have so-called any absolute favorite player. I like different styles in different players. I like their approach. And it's actually unique in chess. You know, you can get to absolute highest level by having completely different playing style. I mean, you can play like Karpov and become world champion. You can play like Kasparov and become world champion. Yeah, like you can have different approach to the game, different style, and still be at the top. So, right now I don't have any favorite player, but I get inspiration from many players. Okay. Including all our young players, by the way.
Okay. I think that the reason, by the way, that Satyajit asked about ping pong is he said that he was once at a tournament with you where he played with you and a bunch of other top players were all playing ping pong. So, and I know that, as I mentioned earlier, I know you played badminton. I saw a picture of you doing yoga. So, definitely, strong emphasis on fitness, which of course is to be commended. And I just realized there was one more question, if you're okay, Surya. You mentioned in an interview that you hadn't had any training until basically you were near grandmaster level, and then you started training with legendary Latvian grandmaster Alexei Shirov. What sort of lessons did you learn from that experience?
So yeah, like my first laptop was after I became grandmaster. Before I became grandmaster, I didn't have any laptop either. I got a desktop also after I became like international master or something, but very basic. And yeah, no formal training by grandmasters or something. So I would consider my first, strong trainer would be Alexei. It was a very interesting experience. He's special in his own way, and he's very creative. And the passion for chess that I saw in Alexei is incomparable, actually. Actually, even now. In fact, I would like to emphasize on this. Let me get back to pro chess training. When I contacted Alexei if he could take some classes on pro chess training, he was like, yeah, sure, I will do it. And then I said, look, I mean, this is a startup company, and this is what we can offer you, and so on and so. And the classes are typically 1 hour live. The first thing he said, Surya, I mean, I cannot work on the time constraint. I mean, 1 hour is, I cannot work on 1 hour. I said, but we pay by per class, and per class is this. And it's like, that doesn't matter, but finance is completely different, but 1 hour I cannot work. I'm like, okay, awesome. You can stretch it. I mean, all my classes are, for example, going up to 1.5 hours. And I said, you know, a bit here and there is okay. Every time he would take class, minimum it would be like 3 hours. One day it was like 5 hours.
That's amazing.
Because wow. He starts enjoying it so much, and the students are completely glued. He is enjoying it. So his passion is huge. Huge respect for him.
That's an amazing story. Thank you. So Surya, I know you're super busy. Anything to add before we let you go?
Yes. The thing to add is my greatest addition in my life, my best teacher right now. I never got a better teacher than her. Her name is Arya Ganguly. She was born on 3rd of January 2021. And every moment that I spend with her is a learning for me. Even if one day I could enjoy the life the way she enjoys the life, the way she sees life, that is blissful. So every moment I'm learning from her. And life has changed in the most beautiful manner for me.
Excellent. Shout out to Arya. And the fact that you've got a baby at home on top of all the other responsibilities you've enumerated makes me all the more grateful for your taking the time for this, Surya. So, of course, listeners can check out prochesstraining.com if you're a Nimzo player or semi-Tirash player or interested in becoming one. I definitely recommend Surya's course. And Surya, could you tell us which tournaments we should root for you in again before we let you go?
I'm playing in Sharjah, so that's happening in mid of September. There are some travel issues, but I'm pretty sure I'll overcome them, and I'll end up playing Sharjah. And then in October, I'll play Bundesliga. And actually, just before this interview, like literally just before this interview, 15 minutes before this, literally, I got an invitation for FIDE Grand Swiss in Riga.
Awesome.
So I'll be playing that too.
All right. Well, congratulations. And again, we'll be tuning in and rooting for you. And you're reasonably active on Twitter, just in terms of keeping up with you. Are there any other social media people should be aware of, Surya?
Sure. Thank you. Thanks a lot, Ben. It was fantastic. Enjoyed talking with you. Thank you.
Okay. Thanks so much.
Thank you.
Thanks to everyone who helps make Perpetual Chess possible, most of all to my producer, Matthew Passy. I also would like to thank everyone who helped spread the word about the show. Did you guys know that there's still people who have not heard of the Perpetual Chess podcast? There's even chess players who have not heard of the Perpetual Chess podcast. So we need to fix that. And the ways to do that include writing positive reviews on podcast platforms or YouTube comments, telling friends. All that stuff makes a difference in helping spread the word about the show. But of course, I most of all want to thank people who provide financial support to the show. Without you all, Perpetual Chess would not be possible. So without further ado, I would like to give thanks to the following people and entities. Chessable.com, David Lazarus of LazmanChess.com, coach of Dave's Young Tigers on Lee Chess, Quality Chess Books, the Capital City Chess Club, the Abysmal Depths of Chess blog, Adapta Interactive Web Designs and Services, Apprentice Twitch Channel, Anita Deer, Austin Clough, Benjamin Porto, Bill Ziegler, Kathy Carr, Chad Oliver, The Charlotte Chess Center, The Chess Central's Chess Blog, Chessmood.com, Chris Flanagan, Chris Lott, Dan O'Hanlon, Daniel Heath, Danny Davidson, David Mitchell, David Shriver, I am Dimitri Snyder, I am Eric Rosen, Eric Tam, Farhan Tawar, Barasawaf, Gary Foreman, Glenn Downing, Greg Harfst, I am Greg Shahadi, Gregory Gulick, James Holyhead, James Kennedy, Jay Garrison, Jeff Martinson, Jeff Schaefer, Jeremy Nielsen, John Jernigan, John Rockefeller, John MacArthur, Kevin Forsyth, Kevin O'Callaghan, King Cell, the King's Crusher YouTube channel, Lucio Casada Silva, the Law Offices of Stuart Katz, Matthew Feeney, Michael Kahn, FM Michael Oblin, Mr. Mike Shahadi, the famous Mr. Dodgy, the Nerdinaze Twitch channel, Grandmaster Peter Prohaska, Peter Sodi, Philip Flummins, the Playmore Chess Academy of the Hamden Chess Club, Reuven Fisher, Ross Crossland, Seattle Chess Club, Shane Unger, Stefan Kelty, Stephen Martinez, Sven Gearson, Thomas Stanix, Thomas Tachenko, Todd Bryan of StrongChess.com, Todd Kennedy, The Vintage Patsers, which is a Chess.com improver group, Wayne Beam, William Hogarth, and I also would like to thank Ace Viega, Adam Ralph of ChessEngland.com, Adrian Gutierrez, Al Hastings, Alan and Maggie Sue, Alex Pejas, Alexander Markovitz, Antonio Cancino, Antonio K. Leonfort, FM Andre Terikov, Dr. Andrew Perry, Angus McLeod, Barry Hessian, Bill Juniper, Bill Moran, Bill Trammell, Brad and Andy Rosen, Brett Howard, Lynn, Brian, Chase, Brian Mullis, Bruce Scott, Brian Tillis of Palm Beach Chess, Cameron Davis, Chad Hilton, Chess Patser Spain, Dr. Charles Snodgrass, Chris Kiefer, Chris Wainscott, Christopher Baumgartner, Christopher Shabri, Christopher Wood, I am Christoph Zalecki, a.k.a. Chess Explained, Coach J's Chess Academy, Costa Carras, Courtney Fry, Craig Mallon, Daniel Ginsberg, Daniel Naylor, Dave Saylor, David Blaskoczek, David Brown, David Hamblin, David Cramley, Dalen Shelton, Tennis Parrish, FM Donnie Ariel, Dwayne Edmonds, Ed Daly, Ed Mead, Edwin Rodriguez, Ethan Smith, Evan Rosenberg, Ewan Richardson, Ian Mason, Felipe Melo Padilla, Fox Valley Chess Club of Aurora, Illinois, Francis Letart Lavoir, Dr. Frank Tortoris, Frank Zananis, Gary Andrews, Gary Lewis, Gautam Narula, Gene Stewart, George Harris, Giovanni Russo, Han Shu, Harish Srinivasan, Howard Behan, Jacob Kovach, Jason Apollo, Jason Murray, Jacques Perry, James Aspinwall, James Benastia, James Muir, Jason Woolham, Jadeep Chakrabarty, Jeff Anderson, Jeffrey Martello, Yep Hoyland, Jerry Wells, Jesse Zakumos, Jesse McNulty, Jim Ratliff, Joe Dasano, Joe Valdez, Joel Thomas Ramos, John McAdams, John Tully, Juan Almagar, Dr. John Fallon, John Fernandez, John Fontaine, John Hartman, John Jeffrey, John McMurtry, Jonathan Slater, John Quist, John Tully, Jose Rodriguez, Justin Gardner, WGM Jen Shahadi, Joel Rocky, John Thompson, Grandmaster Josh Friedel, I am Kare Christensen, WGM Katerina Nemsova, Kelly Palmer, Kevin Pryor, I am Kostya Kravutsky, Krishna Gopala Krishnan, Kyle McAvoy, Larry Cook, Larry Ryforth, Laura Boyovsky, Macaulay Peterson, Maria Emelyanova, aka PhotoChess, Mark Shaves, Mark Fitzpatrick, Mark Miller, Mark Wilkins, Marco Bulatovic, Martin Knudsen, Martin Krug, Matthew Tedesco of SeattleChessMeetup.org, Matthias Plock, the Mechanics Institute Chess Club of San Francisco, Michael Allard, Michael Hudson, Mike Clem, Mitchell Fabian, Nate Gobel, Nate Solon, Neil Bruce, Negma Malajanov, Nicholas Isabel, Olaf Mueller-Michaels, GM Pascal Charbonneau, Passy Passanen, Paul Blaine, Bain, Paul Clarkson, Paul Sweeney, Paulo Santana, Peter Lux, Queenside Management Limited of Switzerland, Randall Temple, Ricky Grijalva, Richard Hallenbach, Richard Tucker, Robert Callahan, Robert Tichy, Robert Turner, Rory Coleman, Rory Yearwood, Ryan Berg, the Say Chess YouTube channel and publishing empire, Scott McKinnon, Scott Rose, Sean Krause, Sebastian Finsterwalder, Sergey McCagan, Seth Ruzica, Sean Tracy, Silver Knights in Richmond, Stefan Roller, WGM Tatev Abrahamian, Thomas Brown, Tim Brennan of TacticsTime.com, Tim Seymour, Timothy Ha, FM Timothy Wall, Tobiah Rex, Tom Edsel, Tommy Farron, Tony Rotella, Tyron Price, Vishnu Srikumar, William Brock, William Peterson, FM Zhao Cheng of Chess1000.com, and Zhivko Stoyanov. Thanks to you all for the support, and we will catch you all next week.
Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.